Hello and welcome to this week's bonus podcast with me, Michael.
And me, Gemma.
And today we are going to be talking about Coronation Street on strike.
Yeah.
Because it's all going down at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah,
in the news,
is.
There's striking going on in the country. We've got docks on strike, we've got train drivers on strike, we've got the teachers on strike. Damn teachers. But yeah, schools may well be closed, but we have a history lesson for you today. We're going to be talking all about the times when Coronation Street has been disruptive by industrial action.
Disrupted.
What did I say?
Disruptive.
Yeah.
Both in the show and... not on the show.
Mostly we're talking about what's been going on outside. Because there have been strikes on Coronation Street at the factory a lot.
As we all know, every so often, somebody will get fired in the factory and then everyone will go on strike.
Yeah, the girls will not rally to protest their unfair dismissal. But we'll get to that later because, to be honest, I think that the far more interesting aspect is how Coronation Street itself has been disrupted by striking actors and technicians in the past. Don't you just hate it when that happens?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, I do. I hate it so much.
It's almost as bad as the football. But luckily, unlike football, striking has not really affected Coronation Street, particularly in the last... 40 years or so? So this is actually going to be a proper history lesson where we look back over pretty much the first 20 years of the show and just see kind of what happened. And I think this is kind of... hopefully there'll be some stories here that people don't know about. I think there are some kind of big strikes that are fairly well known about by Coronation Street viewers. But I just found this really, really fascinating doing some research about it at the weekend. Big thanks to Coropedia, as always, for providing...
Oh, Coropedia.
I'm going to say about 98% of what's coming in this in this episode today. But hopefully we'll be able to fill in some gaps with some commentary and opinions.
Yeah.
So it was all... striking was all going down in the 60s and 70s, wasn't it? Everyone was doing it.
Yeah, if
apparently,
you weren't doing it, then you were out on your ear.
Yes, it was basically, inflation rates were going up, industrial action was, people were...
No, you can't say strikes happened because industrial action happened.
No, I don't. I know. I'm saying people are kind of getting more used to the idea that they were hearing about these radical ideas that you could stand up to your bosses if you wanted to. And generally, workers up and down the country and across the world, I guess, were realising that the conditions that some of them were having to work in weren't really up to snuff. So they just started taking to the streets and the pickets and saying, no more, no more. And then that definitely affected Coronation Street. We had, there were some actor strikes, some technician strikes, and we're gonna see how it reflected and affected our favourite
soap,
really.
We're going through it chronologically.
We are. We're going to go through chronologically-ish. And I don't know whether I've got all of them, but I've got some of the main ones and some of the effects that it had on Coronation Street. And the very first one was that really affected Coronation Street's broadcasting was within the first couple of months of Corrie being on air, wasn't it? Oh, back in 1961. So this was all when Coronation Street was broadcast live every other episode.
Yeah, it was still recorded live. For a while after this, but it wasn't broadcast live.
No, so right when Coronation Street started, they would generally film one episode and broadcast it live, and then they'd record another one to be broadcast later that week. And I think a fair few people know that, but it seems to get a bit inflated in people's minds about how long that went on for. Because when I forget about when it actually ended, I was like, oh yeah, for years Coronation Street was live, but it was literally just a couple of months. I think when... the last time they had the live episode, maybe, you had William Roach saying, well, back in the early days of Coronation Street, we were broadcast live every week. But no, it kind of,
well,
by
it was
February, it was not, it was, but
it
I
was
think,
3 months.
Yeah, we had, yes, Coronation Street started in December 1960, and Friday the 10th of February, with episode 19 of Coronation Street, was kind of where it ended. So there was a strike there, where... a letter had been sent by an engineer who was in charge of some of his workers, and he was not happy that they refused to work an extra 2.5 hours. No, 2.25 hours. Sorry, I don't know.
3/4.
What, 2 3/4 hours? A little bit of extra time.
They didn't want to work
when an episode
extra.
Had overrun. No, because...
No, it wasn't a Coronation Street episode. It was a play.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So
the play overran.
Play overran, and these engineers...
They were like,
well,
we're not doing it.
Yeah, they were told, work a bit more, please, go on. And they're like, no, actually.
No.
So there was all kind of striking going on.
And incidentally, this is why you shouldn't work on your lunch hour, because you don't get paid.
Well, yeah, exactly. But they ended up standing up to them, and so it all kind of went down in Granada, which is where this was all going on. And Granada, of course, was the original home of Coronation Street as well. So on Friday the 10th of February, basically, no episode was made what? Because the engineers were not available to make it. So instead, they showed episode one again, so it was repeated of the first ever episode of Coronation Street, and they kind of put it out there saying, oh, this is just a way of showing people who've just been catching up with the show where it all began.
Previously on Coronation Street.
It was basically not a clip show exactly, but yeah, previously on Coronation Street, in the very first episode of it. And after that, they just were like, you know, we can't risk this happening again. Like, you know, we don't want to be get all set up ready for another live
held
episode.
And then by and then these militant
technicians. Unionists. Yeah, so that was it for live episodes of Coronation Street for 40 years. And it wasn't until December, when was that? 2000, when they had the 40th anniversary episode with the, you know, Vera Duckworth in the hospital, the tarmac in the street and everything. That was the next time that they did a live episode. So, yeah, that just...
Burned.
Exactly. It does make me wonder, like, how long they would have actually continued that broadcast pattern had the technicians not striked that time.
Oh, it seems like quite an easy way of just getting it done. You know, it gets done, it gets done, it gets done.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But, you know, some of the live episodes did go out with the odd hiccup and slightly fluff line. Although, to be fair, we've seen some of those early episodes. It wasn't really obvious, was it? I think, you know, when you're watching things from back in the 60s, you forgive the odd missed line here or there, live or not.
One thing I'm not sure about is how many TV shows were recorded like this or broadcast like this.
I think it was more of a common thing back in the day because it was just easier for whatever reason. I'm sure somebody would be able to tell us to get it out there rather than the transporting it. And what were you going
to... It was expensive, wasn't it? And the technology was more difficult.
Yeah, more expensive to distribute it if...
I don't know. If they have to...
We are a little bit, but apparently
it was...
We can say,
well, what are you going to do about it? This is a podcast, not a conversation.
So that was the first time that strike action really had a huge impact in the broadcast of Coronation Street, but it wasn't until the end of 1961 when it became a whole lot more noticeable on screen. So this was the Equity Actors Strike, which ran between November 1961 to April 1962, and there was a problem between ITV and Equity, who of course is the actors' union. And back then, there was an agreement between them that said only Equity actors could appear on ITV. So you had to be in this union if you wanted to, you know, have your face on TV, unless you were a child. And Coronation Street certainly leaned into that a little bit later.
Or a seal.
So to tell us a little bit about...
Or a giraffe.
That there weren't any giraffes in Coronation.
No, but if you were a giraffe, you could be.
You didn't need an equity card. No.
Equity were saying, look, you've been running for 6 years now. You're making loads of money. We want more money for our actors, please. We want the basic rate of pay to go up but they wanted it to go up by quite a lot, didn't they?
Yeah, 260% pay rise thereafter. Now, please? Teachers got that. I'd be laughing.
I don't have any. What's the word? I don't have any idea what this
is in modern money.
Well, they had 10 guineas. They wanted 36 guineas.
Per episode.
Is 10 guineas really crap? I don't know. If you're saying, right, I'm doing this for a fiver, I want, you know, 25 quid, that makes, you know, that feels more suitable. But if 10 guineas was like so much money, then I don't know.
Honestly, I don't know. Yeah, they wanted to go from 10 to 36 guineas. But that was a basic appearance fee. That's for your dirks of 1960s Coronation.
So if you've got more than 10 lines, they wanted 46 guineas.
I don't know how many lines generally an actor had in an episode, but 10 doesn't feel like too many, does it?
Equity was saying, look, TV's more popular now. Theatres are closing. We should get more pay for our actors in this. So everybody who's in the union, who you have to be in the union to be on ITV.
Yeah.
So everybody, do not sign any new contracts after the 28th of June.
Yeah, don't honour any that you have signed since the 28th of June, because it was kind of autumn time that this was going on.
It was November that they started their...
all these talks.
Their strikes. Discussions. No, the strike began in November.
Yeah.
So I always wondered this, because I know that a very few number of actors appeared during the strike, and I always thought they were scabs. I thought, oh no,
no.
Why were they in it?
No, so
it's because they'd already signed.
They'd signed contracts before 28th of June, exactly. Yeah.
So don't worry, everybody.
And it was some of the big name actors as well. I just want to go back.
Luckily, they were so lucky that they tied these guys down.
I know. Otherwise, imagine. It could have gone off the air, and
although
so early in Coronation Street's history as well, that could have spelled the end of it.
It really could have wrecked the whole show.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that. It had been going 6 years, and just wanted to clarify that that was what ITV that had been going 6 years.
Didn't I say that?
Well, I think you just said it. I don't know.
ITV.
So it wasn't. Yeah. So this is still. You know, Corrie hadn't even been going a year at this point, and already there was this disruptions and things threatening to stop things going. But yeah, this obviously didn't just affect Coronation Street either. In fact, Corrie was the only TV drama, the only ITV drama that is, that kept on going during the strike. Everything else. Had to be pulled or have severe reductions in the number of episodes, and then they put repeats on and everything.
Well,
they
managed
to go on. I was going to say they managed to put a couple of comedies and things on. They still produce some of those because they didn't need such big cast, and they were able to cobble things together with low numbers. But for anything else, they couldn't cope.
There are other things that don't have actors in them on telly,
like
the news.
Yeah, well, yeah, that could.
Or like, children's presenters, they're not actors, are they?
No, of course. But
Muffin the Mule or Andy Pandy.
I mean, I'm guessing stuff like that still kept on going. But yeah, drama-wise, Corrie was really the only one left, which is great for ratings.
Do you reckon Andy Pandy didn't count? Because Andy Pandy's a puppet, if you didn't know. Andy Pandy could still appear, but the woman who the puppeteer is like, no, I'm not going, I'm not doing it. So it's just Andy Pandy in a pile.
See, I don't know when Andy Pandy and Muffin the Mule was. Was that about the same time? I guess it was. I don't know.
Let's see.
But so Coronation Street was basically unrivaled in terms of TV dramas on ITV at this time, which was great. I mean, it was already, the ratings were climbing during this first year, but with no competition, they smashed it.
Andy Pandy started in 1950 and continued to 1970.
Oh, well, there we go. Maybe they were affected as well.
And it was originally live.
Was it not BBC?
I don't know.
I'm going to say it was. Yeah, this was back in the day when they had BBC One and ITV. So I guess
BBC were like, yes!
I think it probably was. It's probably quite good for like Doctor Who and things, if you wanted a bit of scripted drama. But so Coronation Street kept on going, but almost instantly, any guest cast or, you know, weekly or short-term contracts just disappeared because... a lot of the smaller cast members signed on a weekly basis, and once the strike started on the 1st of November, they just had to have reasons for them to disappear off of the programme. So we're talking about the likes of Jed Stone, famous cap wearer, and Bill Gregory as well. And on the 6th and the 8th of November episodes of 1961, they had to put together a load of excuses for why characters weren't there anymore. So, for example, in that episode, we see Elsie Tanner phoning up Bill Gregory, who was her beau at the time, I think, to tell him to stay away because this was during the Poison Pen saga. And that's a really famous early Coronation Street storyline, isn't it?
Made into a stamp.
Well, yeah, for the scene where Elsie and Ina have this stand-up confrontation in the street. It's a brilliant, brilliant
There's
episode.
There's two of them, though, aren't there?
There are two episodes. I get them mixed up
in
as
one
well
of
sometimes.
Them, a handbag goes through a window.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it is, to be honest. But yeah, so that Poison Pen episode with the row in the street was 8th of November. So they were gearing up for this massive showstopper of an episode, and they had to say, we've got to rewrite it quickly. We've lost a load of the cast. But other actors whose contracts were that much longer were kind of disappeared in dribs and drabs over the next few weeks and months. So we're talking the likes of Emily Nugent disappeared, later Bishop, Leonard Swinley, Esther Hayes, Christine Hardman, Doreen Lostock. So by the end of this, once everybody's contracts had run out...
Oh, they had all fallen.
Yeah, that left us with 14 characters at fairly big name stars because they wanted to give them longer contracts.
Yeah, this is the question.
The end of June.
I mean, the question is, are these big names in Corrie because they were the only ones left? You could argue that slightly, but I really think that these were the main players anyway.
Well, who did we have?
We had Annie Walker, we had Jack Walker, we had Albert Tatlock, we had Frank... and Ken Barlow.
Mm-hmm.
We had Harry Hewitt and Concepta Riley. We had Elsie Tanner. We had Florrie Linley. We had Ina Minnie and Martha. We had Len Fairclough and we had Dennis Tanner.
Yeah.
So these were This is the staple of Corrie in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they also made up half of all of ITV's actors in early 1962.
Because there was
nobody left.
Basically, for the rest of ITV, these were half of the actors that were on the book. So Coronation Street really did have the lion's share here. And you're right, maybe some of these characters' longevity could be put down to showing what they were made of during these 5 months, that they were the only ones on the street.
Now, can you guys imagine watching Corrie for 5 months with just 14 people in it?
I think it might be quite
refreshing.
I think
some people would really like that.
I mean, there are complaints these days about there being too many characters.
But who would you pick?
I mean, it's not an exact like-for-like comparison, is it? Because back in these days, there were probably about, 30 characters or main actors in the cast at this time anyway. So it slashed it in half. So nowadays, when we've got, 90, 100 on the main cast, if you count all the little kiddies, you'd be left with 40 to 50. And actually, that doesn't sound too bad. Like, Neighbours, when that was going, had a fairly reduced cast compared to Coronation Street, didn't it?
But if you think about who's left here, if you only had 14 characters, you've got, like, Annie and Jack, so that would be maybe Jenny and Daisy.
I'd hope that they'd keep the pub and not... But would you want to keep the pub open and Roy's and the Bistro?
No,
maybe not. So,
well, see, Albert Tatlock, could he be analogous to Roy?
Yeah, let's keep Roy on, shall we?
Roy, and then we've got Frank and Ken, so that's a father and son duo there.
Yeah, look, family-wise, we've got the Barlows, we've got the... I mean, Harry and Conceptor, I can't remember if they were married at this point. I know.
Well, they're definitely dating,
yeah. And then you've got the shop, and then you've got the women in the snug.
So you'd have Dev...
Yeah.
Or you'd have Rita.
Yeah. I mean, the cabin isn't used these days anyway, is it? So I'm gonna keep Dev. I'm going to say, yeah, Jenny and Daisy will keep Dev. Family-wise,
Roy.
I think, Roy. I think probably let's chuck some Platts in, shall we?
We'll have David and Max.
So are we keeping Max in this, are we?
Well, he's back from prison now.
Will he be?
In my mind.
Yeah, okay. What about we keeping Gail, or should we let Helen have a bit of a
Let's have Audrey in there.
Okay, oh yeah, fair enough.
And then we need somebody for her to be in the snug with. Rita.
I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't want to be keeping Rita on for 5 months. So she can't make, more than 20 episodes a year these days, can she?
Got to have Ken then.
Oh yeah, just for continuity's sake, we'll have Ken. Well, let's have Ken and Daniel then. Then we can have Daniel and Daisy still
having
their scenes
together. So now we've got five more.
We're just making rough estimates here. Who is that valuable to Coronation Street that we'd keep them in?
What about Carla for the factory and then...
No, but if you got Carla in the factory, that automatically means you got to have the factory knicker stickers. So I don't know whether I particularly want them.
What about the Allahans then?
Yeah, okay.
Yasmin and Alia, and then we've got...
Hang on, they're not Allahans.
Oh, sorry, I meant Nazir's. Let's have Vardy and Asher.
Yeah, maybe.
And then maybe...
They could do with some more material.
Three more teens.
Are we going to...
Not Summer. Amy, Aaron, and...
Oh, God, we have Aaron, have we? All right.
Amy, who else?
Can I put a request in for Evelyn, please, just as an extra one? Because I would have thought Maureen Littman would be on one of these valuable contracts. And
yeah.
Just saying.
Well, although she would be on the front lines of the strikes, I'm sure.
You reckon? Tyrone, should we keep in there?
Yes,
as well?
And that'll do then.
Well, there's our 14 character. But even for 14 for 5 months, that might be pushing it in terms of how much tolerance I'd have for that particular group of characters.
It's really hard to imagine, but the thing is though, I don't know how big the cast was.
Yeah, it was about 30.
Right, so it's half of them. So
yeah, so we'd have a.
I don't know.
I wonder whether if we had that small number, they would be forced to cut down the episode numbers as well, or whether the advertisers these days would be like, say, no,
the thing
you
is,
still keep making 3 hours a week.
If you imagine, like, you can imagine casts of your favourite TV show, which have got a drastically much smaller cast than Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, well, they managed to make so-and-so episodes. But they don't make 3 episodes every week for the entire... year.
No. Well, good on Coronation Street for carrying on. They did have the odd guest character, not very much during this time. we also had famously children were used on occasion. And even sometimes, apparently, they had children like playing milkman and postman and things in like shots where you couldn't necessarily tell. I read that I don't think a postman ever actually appeared on screen played by a child, but a milkman apparently definitely did. But then Equity got wind of this and they were like, no, not having that actually. So Coronation Street had to go back on that. And in the end...
I'm surprised that this didn't make them come up with Biker Grove, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, in the end, Coronation Street was like, right, we can't have Equity actors, can't have children pretending to be adults. Let's bring in the animals.
Interestingly, at this time, I'm pretty sure... what's her name? Who's Harry Hewitt's daughter? Lucille.
Lucille, yeah.
I think she was the youngest
cast
member. It's really interesting to me that they didn't just invent a bunch of children, which is what if it was an American TV show, surely they would have done that, you know, like they did in Married with Children, where this kid just had turned up for a season.
Oh, no, Carrie and Conceptor have had a baby and now they're 10.
Oh, Christopher, you're looking fantastic. Very old.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they brought in the kit because, you know, you don't, if you're going to have a choice between working with children or animals, you work with animals because if they annoy you, you can eat them.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, well, like I don't know whether that's what they did. Sea lions are the most famous one. So I think it was like, I'm going to say like February, January, March sort of time, 1962, there was a great episode where Dennis Tanner was putting on a variety show or something in the Mission Hall, which, you know, was a task in itself considering how few actors they could show.
Well, maybe turn up to watch it.
Yeah, but he'd got this act together with these two performing sea lions, and then at the end of the episode, he smuggles them back to the Rovers, and Annie and Jack come back after a night out and find these two sea lions splashing about in the bath, and the look on Annie's face is just priceless.
I know, I think it gives you a skewed perception of how much people in the 60s spent time with circus animals.
Yeah, I think
you'd imagine that they were just always hanging around, well, sea lions and monkeys.
Thank goodness they had Dennis Tanner that could be, you know, fairly believable that he might. Because these days, if you know, you had David Platt rocking up and saying, "Oh, hey, I've just found this sea lion down
the thing
to Ginnell. What should we do with it?"
When you get to this episode, you go, What's Dennis Tanner got himself involved in now? You don't go, why is there a sea lion in Coronation Street?
Well, there'd already been
a
chimpanzee the previous year as well, like late 1961, so not too far into this strike going on. Dennis had had an episode where he gets this monkey, this chimpanzee called Rupert, and he has to hide him from all the other residents. So he was looking after him for a night. It was part of his work as a talent agent or whatever, and so he has to smuggle this chimpanzee.
Was he trying to get him to be the new Tetley face of Tetley?
Maybe he was. Yeah, Elsie ends up walking into her house and seeing this Rupert sitting in the sink, and then she goes to Dennis and goes, "Why is there a gorilla sitting in my sink?" And then during the night, Rupert escapes number 11, makes his way to the Rovers. Poor Annie and Jack.
They're always been molested
twice in 6 months
by exotic animals.
Yeah, so they come down in the middle of the night and find Rupert the chimpanzee knocking back milk stouts in the snug, which I thought was brilliant.
Oh, to be a chimp on curry.
The thing is, if Coronation Street had this problem now and they didn't have the actors, I don't think people would be happy with them bringing in animals
this.
Back in the day it was more acceptable to say, yeah, let's just have a chimpanzee drinking milk stout.
Like I just said, we had the Tetley chimps.
Yeah, that went away into the 90s, didn't it? We had them advertising tea bags.
And then it went because of animal...
Yeah, yeah.
Because of animal rights.
I mean, Coronation Street's use of animals at the moment is already, you know, almost nothing. It's a rare occasion when one of the pets makes an appearance, isn't it? Who knows whether Rover is still alive, for example. But anyway...
I don't understand why they...
I guess they're just too...
I think it's just, like, too much faff.
Too much faff.
That's
basically it. Too much faff to have pets on Coronation Street.
And they don't really ever add... there's no plot involved.
Sometimes there is.
Yeah, I know, but they would.
Mostly them dying.
Or getting eaten by another cat, by a cat.
Whatever. We never found out what happened to Scylla the Chinchilla, no. How she escaped out of her cage, did we?
No, we never did.
Convince it's Ruby. Anyway, speaking of pets, this was also the time in the show when a few other characters got pets to make up storylines. So we had the Hewitts had Lucky Lolita, the greyhound, for a little bit. Ena Sharples got a budgie called Archie, and this came after Ena had had a stroke and went to hospital, and then it was like a convalescence kind of animal. And
what?
Yeah,
the NHS was vastly different in the day.
I know, these days you just get a lollipop.
Yeah, they go home. you've had a stroke. Lie down for a bit.
I don't know whether it was the NHS that provided this.
I'm pretty
this
sure it was.
Budgie to Ena Sharples.
I'm pretty sure it was.
And also, most famous of all, Minnie Coldwell's famous cat Bobby.
Aww.
was first seen during this time as well. And Minnie came to be known as the crazy cat lady of Coronation Street, basically, didn't she?
The original cat lady.
Bobby is like the most famous and beloved Coronation Street pet of those early days.
Saying it.
Yeah.
Bobby.
There was
exactly like that.
Lots of other funny ways that Coronation Street had to hide the fact that they were somewhat low on numbers during this time, weren't there?
Now, yeah, I mean, I think I always bring this up, but I remember Equity kicked off in when they had Thunderbirds, because you know, when they used to have the hand, they used to cut to just live action hands.
Yeah.
And back in the day, they used to, anyone that was on set, right, you just hold these poker cards or whatever. And then Equity kicked off about that, so you couldn't even have hand models.
No.
So when they did this stock footage...
Yeah, there was an episode 117, these the residents go to the bingo, and they used stock footage of a bingo caller so that they didn't have to pay an actor to perform.
This is really interesting. They got away with that.
Well, they had footage of a bingo caller, but the voice was recorded by Peter Adamson, who played Len Fairclough.
Yeah. So, but they must have got away with it because the bingo caller must have been a real bingo caller.
Yeah,
it had been an actor playing a bingo caller, they couldn't have used the stock footage.
I guess not. I don't know. But then they also, it was Florrie Linley that went to the bingo, and you see a shot of her with like fellow bingo callers up to her side. But it's
bingo players.
Yeah, Plenger. Bingo players sitting up next to her, and they just had like mannequins dressed up.
Do you remember when you all complained during COVID when that mannequin got hit by a car?
Sarah Louise.
It's traditional.
It is.
For Coronation Street.
Yeah. Then there was another episode a couple of weeks later, well, a couple of months later, maybe episode 127, when Ena returns to the vestry after she'd walked out a few months beforehand after she'd got in trouble with Leonard Swinley for being caught drinking.
Leonard Swinley was always minging on about her going to the pub.
I know. Well, this one resulted in her walking out, and then for episode 127, that's like her homecoming back to the vestry. But sadly, committee chairman Ernest Baxter turns up at the party and catches Ena drinking. Baxter never actually appeared on screen, and he's just talked about coming. He's like, watch out, here comes Ernest Baxter, look out, Ena. And the end of the episode is this cliffhanger shot of Ena like reacting, going,
oh no!
Because apparently this guy walks in, and we never actually see him.
Well, Ena also had to do a bit more reacting to things or
that segue. Weren't there. Excellent.
In episode 134, she's found unconscious in the vestry, and she gets taken to hospital by fairies because there aren't any paramedics, there aren't any hospital staff, and there's a scene of Ena being wheeled through the hospital corridor. And you see her looking up at the ceiling.
Yeah, apparently I've not seen this clip.
It's a POV.
Ena Sharples, POV, hospital ceiling, because they can't show her looking forward because
nobody's
filming
her.
Because it'd be empty corridors and presumably not filmed in a hospital as well. It was a model.
So what's the model?
The ceiling.
Was a fake
ceiling.
So they just had a camera with a fake hospital.
Yeah, basically. They were very resourceful back in the day in Coronation
Street. Can you imagine though, this is them scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point, aren't they? They're going, what are we going to do here?
Like, come on, just agree to something. Well, Equity even tried to get people like Violet Carson, who played Ena Sharples, to go back on their contracts, like to break them and join everyone else on the pickets. But Violet Carson very publicly said, no, I've got no intention of breaking my contract. I signed the contract. I'm going to stay in this show. Good for her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that saved, like, Corrie, didn't it?
Because
who knows if they had stopped it if they would ever have started it up again. I mean, it was super popular.
It was, but it was still early days. But
Coronation Street's story, very much like The Factory, is a series of minorly avoided disasters throughout the years.
When it you was actually back look in the back 60s it, and the 70s.
It, yeah. So many times it nearly got chucked off the air.
By the spring of 1962, all these striking actors were like really, really suffering. They got their hardship pay. Equity ended up paying out £15,000. But it only stretched so far. So on the 28th...
Well, this kind of reminds me of what happened during COVID.
What?
Well, people couldn't work.
Oh, yeah. And they were suffering the arts. Actors didn't. Yeah,
the arts always suffer.
Mm-hmm. It was like that. But unlike COVID, you couldn't just meet and say, right, COVID, that's enough of that. Stop right. Killing everybody now,
we're
please.
We're fed up with this. We'll give you money and go away.
28th of March 1962, the two sides met for the final time and said, right, let's agree on some terms.
Hang on a minute. Saying they met for the final time, that's like saying your keys are always in the last place you look.
They met and came to an agreement, which was that 28 guineas would now be paid for an actor.
So they wanted,
what, 35, didn't they? From 10 to 35,
I think. 36.
So they got 28. That's still a pretty big increase, to be fair, wasn't it? They said, well, if you've got fewer than 10 lines, 28 guineas. Oh, if it's shown in all four ITV regions, If Coronation Street or, you know, whatever programme you're acting for was only showed, say, in the north of England, then you'd get a quarter of that 28 guineas. Oh, no, sorry, I'm wrong. You would get a minimum, you get a baseline of 15 guineas.
So they used to be on 10, so they're still getting more.
Yeah, but actors with more than 10 words, they would get at least 36 guineas.
Which they wanted 46.
Yeah, but if you were a proper star name, which a lot of the Coronation Street cast were, that could like go over 75 guineas.
I've got no idea what a guinea is.
No idea, but it was probably a lot of money back in those days. So that was the end of the first major industrial action to affect the Coronation Street, but it was not the last.
Is that per episode?
Yeah. You haven't heard that? Yeah, I don't know how these things work.
Oh, okay, right. So a guinea is £1 and 1 shilling.
What is that? What it's worth these days? Or is that just what
it was
back then?
No, that's what it was back in the day.
I tell you what.
I don't know what a guinea...
Funny money back then.
I don't know what a guinea... I don't know what a shilling...
We'll leave that to our listeners to figure out, shall we?
No, I'm interested now. So what's
I'm going to
talk... 70... What did you say? 75
plus guineas if you were a...
So in 1962...
A Doris Speed.
Let's just say it's 75 quid, Phoenix. Because I don't know what a shilling is.
Yeah, okay.
£1,281.
Oh, that's not bad. I mean, it's no, you know, Friends stars get $1 million per episode.
But people lived more humbly, didn't they? I remember seeing...
Well, they didn't have to pay internet fees or anything, did they? They didn't have to pay for their broadband.
They didn't have to pay for water.
didn't have their subscriptions to Spotify and Disney Plus back
Netflix.
In 1962.
What
have I got to spend my money on? Beer?
Well,
vegetables.
I remember seeing Violet Carson's lovely bungalow she had, didn't she, in Blackpool.
Yeah,
it's
you're
quite
right.
Humble.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll tell you what they needed. Anti-macassars.
What?
And doilies.
What's the first thing you said?
Isn't that thing that goes off the back of your chair, like the doily that goes on the back of your chair so your greasy head doesn't stain the...
Yeah, I don't know. I'll trust you on that one. 1964, Gemma, was the next strike. What was going on with that?
Well, in 1964... TV was getting more and more money, so the
ITV was. This is, ITV, you know, nearly... I think it was 1955 that ITV opened, so it had begun broadcasting.
Now,
it would go nearly 10 years at this point.
So this is back in the day when there were, like, two channels.
Yeah.
ITV and BBC.
BBC One, yeah.
And BBC was not getting... It was being paid through licence fees, as always.
Mm-hmm.
But ITV was allowed to be commercial.
Yeah.
And they were getting more and more money... And the actors are all fine. They got their cushy 75 guineas or whatever. And now the technical staff are like, I would like a bit of that, please. So they wanted to get pay rises. And depending on what their job was, they wanted between 3% to 25%. And they also wanted the working week to be 35 hours instead of 40, like the BBC
had. BBC was 35 hours.
And they wanted, if you get called in on your day off, the crew gets double time plus £10. Plus, it could go up to treble or even quintuple. quintuple.
5 times as much.
For any overtime hours, then asked for plus another day off in lieu.
They had some really big demands.
And we don't want any of those rubbish digestives. We want chocolate digestives only. We want custard creams and bourbons.
Well, you can't make a TV show without the technical staff. So they thought that they had pretty, you know, good grounds to demand these things on.
Well, ITV was like, no. Yeah. So they didn't turn up on the 1st of July.
Yeah.
And then did they come back on the 2nd or did they come off for 5 days?
They came off for 5 days. 6th of July, they came back for more negotiations. But even then,
it wasn't met.
It was a little bit later. I don't even know whether I've got down when it was met. Oh, that's really bad of me. I'll see all the rest of the notes. This was not as long and disruptive a strike as the last one. But really, Coronation Street-wise, it just affected things at the beginning of July.
Yeah, they had two episodes, 372 and 373. They were written and rehearsed and they were supposed to film on them on the 3rd of July, which is right in the middle of the strike.
Mm.
And
they just didn't.
They didn't do it.
No, so we've got two episodes of Coronation Street that just weren't made, but it was too late to change things. So when the strikes came back,
when they came back off the strike,
a week or so later, they just carried on as if those two episodes had been made. So this is like ripe for, you know how Doctor Who like does animated episodes to fill in the gaps of the episodes that have been deleted and everything. And this wasn't a case of being deleted. It just, they literally didn't film them.
I don't know if you remember me saying in the past that the future of acting is really that I think everybody's going to be computer generated, like they did with the corpse of Audrey Hepburn to sell Galaxy Chocolate.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's actually without the realms of possibility that you could computer generate these episodes if you have got a script.
Well, mate, I don't know if there's a script. There's definitely a synopsis.
Well, you said they were written and rehearsed, so there's
a script. But whether the script still exists these days, I don't know. We've got synopsises of what happened. So 372, I mean, the problem with this was that there would be a little bit of continuity change here. Because episode 372 was all about the Ogden family moving into Coronation Street. Now, of course, a lot of us have seen Hilda and Stan's first appearance, but that's just them, like, sizing up the place, isn't it? And Hilda being impressed by them having two taps in the kitchen. And then you got Mr. Wormhole forgetting their names and stuff.
So was that
stuff.
Them that was just them. It?
Yeah, that was them giving her and then buying it.
So we never got to see
it.
Them move
we
in.
We didn't get to see them move in, no. So they move in this episode. Episode 372, they have a party in the street, which seriously pees off Ina Sharples.
This seems like a really major episode.
Yeah, I know. The Hewitts, who had been away in Ireland, so Conceptor and Lucille and Harry, they're back from Ireland. Val Barlow discovers she's pregnant.
Limit,
really
yes.
wasn't that, quite
that
major
been with
plot
Peter
points
and
here.
Susan, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess it must have been.
Well, she didn't have any other children.
No, you're right.
She lost
I don't think she lost the children, no. So it must have been Peter and Susan she finds she's pregnant with.
Imagine.
Trevor Ogden, who is the Ogden's second child, he overhears Val telling Albert Tatlock that she's pregnant, and then Trevor ends up telling Ken before Val has a chance to, so he's fairly miffed about that. So it felt like quite an important episode here. And also, and this is the most interesting part for me, there was supposed to be a third Ogden child. So
I remember this. So in episode 371 must have been when the Ogdens came to see the house.
Maybe.
And I remember them talking about a child that never turned
up. Because you got Irma, obviously, the main Ogden child.
Yeah.
You got Trevor Ogden, who does appear, but very, very briefly in the show.
Trevor.
No one cares about him. But yeah, there was supposed to be this third one called Tony Ogden. And he'd even been cast. An actor called Willie Smith was supposed to be playing Tony Ogden. He even rehearsed the part before the strikes take place. And he was the one who they mentioned in 371. But then, once the strikes came back, he was just never mentioned again. So this character, sadly, got erased out of existence because of the strikes.
It could have been his big break.
Yeah, there was supposed to be a fourth Ogden child as well, called Sylvia. And,
oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
She wasn't supposed to have appeared in these episodes, but she, in the end, they just didn't use her. The backstory was, it's kind of a bit tragic, really. They were both Sylvia and Tony were supposed to have been taken into care after Stan beat them up in drunken rages. Because lovable Stan Ogden was a bit of a family beater back in the day.
That's just how you used to be when you were a man back in the day.
Yeah, so the current, you know, continuity and history of the Ogden family is you got just Irma and Trevor as the two Ogdens. So
Now, I tried to look up what Willie Smith looked like. And I can only find Will Smith.
I assume it's somebody different.
He didn't have to wait all those years until Fresh Prince for his second break.
Well, they did have Davy Jones in Coronation Street back then.
Can you imagine Will Smith with a northern accent?
He can do it all. He can do no wrong. To the 373, the next episode.
He can this do was... no wrong.
Well, he's
also known for his drunken beating rages.
Apart from hitting people on stage at the Oscars, who can forget that?
Blotted his copybook.
Episode 373, so the second one that is no longer exists or never existed. Ken was going to have a massive go at Val for getting pregnant.
Sounds like him.
And then the street residents were going to have a bazaar. So in the episodes leading up to the strike, they were all talking about this big fete, this big bazaar that they were going to put on. And... We never got to see Jack Walker winning the Knobbly Knees competition.
I can imagine
among other things. And also there's something in that episode about Leonard Swinley realising that his wedding to Miss Nugent is coming up rather soon, and in a week's time he's going to be married. But
do you reckon it was the Knobbly Knees that reminded him?
Maybe, yeah. Are you saying that Leonard Swinley had seen Miss Nugent's knees
before
marriage?
No, I can just imagine him looking at them going, oh, I hope that's not what they look like. I haven't even seen her ankles.
Anyway, that's another story, isn't it? So this particular strike really fascinates me, just because... There's two episodes just sitting around on paper somewhere. And it also, like, when you think about Coronation Street's 10,000th episode and stuff, it really wasn't, because you got some that didn't exist.
I think. Well, I mean, they just acted like, oh, you missed that one.
Yeah.
They didn't explain things.
I can't remember. They might have done a little summary to say, this is what's happened.
In the future.
Yeah, they do that
in the future at one point.
Yeah. 1968, you had another big strike. So skipping forward 4 years now, and this was another technician strike. The vast majority of these strikes were unsatisfied technicians who were maybe, you know, I don't blame them.
No, I
wouldn't.
If
you work on TV, yeah, there's the stars in front of the camera, the ones that are going to get all the praise, but you can't make a programme with all the backstage crew as well. And at this time, they wanted a 7% pay increase. They wanted a cost of living rise. They still wanted that 35-hour working week, which hadn't been agreed 4 years before.
You'll get it eventually.
And they wanted an extra week paid holiday each year. So they're going from 3 weeks to 4 weeks.
Now, I don't know enough about labour rights in this country, but we've got pretty good ones, I think, in general.
Well, compared to some other countries,
compared to America.
Just say.
So I don't know what the government mandated amount of time off is, but I think now it's 4, isn't it?
I don't know.
For full-time workers.
As teachers don't need to worry about you plebs and your 3 or 4 weeks off a year, you know. So the openings of 3 new ITV regional stations were going on at this time.
You,
so they timed their strike.
I know.
They timed their strike to really cause a bit of chaos.
Yeah,
there.
Do it.
Although it was only a half an hour strike.
No, I do that. I do that practically every day, where I'm just like, I'm going to have a cup of tea.
Just going to have a little bit of a rest.
I'm going to have a little sit down.
Unfortunately, that half an hour strike coincided with the broadcast of Coronation Street on the 29th of July. So
that
half 7 till
like
8, the technicians down tools, and then it wasn't, that particular episode was just delayed until Wednesday the 31st of July. And then it seemed like, you know, everything was sorted. However, it was not.
Nope.
Over that weekend, things got a heck of a lot worse. 1,000 technicians came out on strike, 800 of which were dismissed instantly, and 1,200 of them were locked... 1,200 more technicians were locked out of their places
of
work.
Who locked them out?
Just the bosses, the higher-ups.
Good relations
between bosses and workers.
Were the bosses like, you're not coming to work, you scabs. Go outside for the rest of them.
Well, fortunately for Coronation Street, 5 episodes had been recorded.
I would imagine that this was done to generate discontent
yeah.
amongst them. Because if they wanted to turn up to work and then the bosses were like, you can't come in because everyone else is on strike, they would get really mad and that would cause infighting.
Probably. That's yeah, evil. Like I said, they had fortunately seen these strikes coming and thought, let's get a few more episodes in the can. So by the time these weekend strikes happened again and everyone down tools, there were five episodes that could then go into, you know, the end of July and into August, and the bosses had to cross the picket lines and say with the tapes and everything and say, here you go, you can show these. And so on the 5th and the 7th of August, episodes 796 and 797 were shown, but halfway through episode 798, there was a blackout. So, and this is a really key scene as well. So Val Barlow was being held hostage by this convicted rapist, Frank Riley. And there was like this pivotal scene where it's like, is she going to be okay? Blackout.
<Don't know. laughs>
Blackout. And when the episode comes back on, however many minutes later, they cut to another scene and viewers had no idea what had happened.
Do you think they're
her.
All sitting at home going, that was artistic?
Yeah. What does that symbolise?
Yeah, the blackness.
Mm. Mm. So yeah, things were not going well for Coronation Street. And next day, the Daily Express even ran an article about it, which we got a quote from.
The Coronation Street episode on ITV, which was hit by technical trouble on Monday, will be shown again tonight. Irate viewers jammed the Granada switchboard yesterday to complain that they couldn't understand what happened. A studio spokesman said, we will screen it again at 7:30. But unless the dispute between ITV technicians and the 15 ITV companies is settled within a day or two, Coronation Street will go off the air altogether. There are only two more recorded episodes in stock.
Oh, nice newscast.
I do like that
voice,
yeah.
So this episode that was cut out halfway through was repeated on Wednesday the 14th of August, which was good because it meant that they could hold out for a little bit longer to show the remaining two episodes that they still had. Round about that time, agreements were reached, though, including the reinstatement of all those sack technicians in time for Curry to resume production of the following episodes. So they managed to just about stick the landing and keep on going without any disruption to the broadcast pattern. Much like they did during COVID, when Coronation Street still kept on going, but we're really getting close to running out of episodes.
You know, we're going to have a disclaimer on Spotify now. We've said COVID about three times.
It doesn't matter. Everyone's talking about it. It's still not gone away.
Everyone's talking right. about
Next up, we have got, this is another great one, this is fascinating, this is not the sort of thing that can happen these days. This is the ITV colour strike of 1969 to 1971.
Make sure that when you're thinking about it, you think of it with a U.
Mm. tell me a bit about this, Gemma. So Coronation Street had been going in colour for a little while at this point, hadn't they?
Yeah, now it's expensive, isn't it, to go from black and white to colour. You need new electronics, you need new cameras, you need longer recording times. I'm also assuming that a lot of stuff had to happen with the makeup had to be different.
Yeah,
the makeup was done specifically for the black and white cameras.
Yeah, it was certainly not just a case of let's get some new cameras, press record and Bob's your uncle.
There was
a lot of work that went into this switch.
They did anything with the costumes and the sets and things. But
I guess it was a little bit like the switch to HD that we had in the early 2000s, wasn't it? Because I remember people at the time saying, oh, you'll be able to see all my wrinkles and everything.
Yeah. But the thing is about it is that it didn't really matter what colour anything was, because you couldn't tell. So some things I would imagine were a bit weird.
Mm.
Anyway, so on the 15th of November 1969, ITV went full colour in many of their regions, but like I said, it cost a lot of money.
Mm.
And the
technicians...
Again! Well, these people!
Mm-hmm.
The Association of Cinematograph and Television and Allied Technicians, which ACT.
Yeah, these are the same people that have been on strike before, the ACTT.
They want 5% more, and if you don't give it to us, we're going to go back to using black and white equipment, which is really funny. And this was done on the Friday the 13th of November.
Oh, Friday the 13th.
1970. Everything went back to black and white. Mm-hmm. Even all the shows that had already been in colour before.
Yeah, so there was one episode of Coronation Street that was recorded in colour, but only ever shown in black and white. And I don't know whether it's been repeated or shown in Canada or anything in colour, or whether it's... It must have been. I think I've seen a picture of it, so it must, you know, have been broadcast somewhere. But I think it's currently that's the only episode to have never been shown in the UK.
The trouble with...
That was made in colour, but, you know, shown in black and white.
This protest was that in the UK, most people didn't even have a colour television.
No, so for a lot of the viewers, they didn't notice. I mean, now, only that right? the creme de la creme of the elite had colour TV sets. I can't back remember. In the early days.
Am I wrong in this? But I remember the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II drove sales of televisions for people's homes.
Yeah.
It wasn't Charles and Diana's wedding that made people buy colour televisions, was it? Because that seems...
I don't think it was. I thought maybe it quite late. Could it have been the Jubilee, maybe?
I don't
know. There was a story on Coronation Street, wasn't there, where hadn't Hilda got a colour TV or something and everyone wanted to watch that? Or there was an episode where Annie Walker got a colour TV for the Rovers, and I seem to remember Ernest Bishop dropping it or something like that. I can't remember. You're tapping away fervently to try and find that out. But yeah, so... It didn't really make much of a difference, but going back now to look back at the older episodes, it's really jarring because famously the first ever colour episode of Coronation Street was the one where they went to the Lake District and the coach, right. Didn't they? And they had the coach crash in black and white, and then the following episode, which was mostly fairly drab hospital scenes, it has to be said, was all in glorious Technicolor, and it did look a bit weird at first while they were getting all the balances right. But yeah, so for a lot of 1970, Coronation Street was in colour. But once these strikes started happening in in 1970 it was mostly colour, but when the strikes happened in November 1970, so nearly a year after the colour broadcast started, yeah, straight back to black and white again.
So just to say, though, in the UK, colour broadcast began in 1967.
That must have been the BBC, then. Or maybe it was bits and bobs.
It was the BBC.
Right, okay, fine.
And it's apparently the first thing that was ever broadcast in colour in the UK was on BBC Two. It was the Wimbledon. And
So we had BBC Two back then, didn't we?
One in London exclaimed, "The grass was so green. He was so transfixed as he watched it on a set outside a shop window that he missed the bus."
I just seem to remember a lot of the early colour episodes of Coronation Street also being quite green. Green and orange are kind of the predominant shades.
When everybody realised that it was a terrible idea to combine those two. And also, apparently, the first colour advert was Bird's Eye Peas. Because you could really see how green they were.
Interesting.
They loved that colour back in the day.
They did. So, yeah, what you got now when you look back at the old episodes is a year's worth. Was it a year? No, it wasn't that much. It was maybe 3 or 4 months or so of black and white episodes after being able to enjoy a year's worth of colour ones. But some of the most, you know, some really poignant. Key poignant scenes that were in black and white, I think that they wouldn't have been as good if they were in colour.
I have to say, I have a real fondness and nostalgia for black and white Corrie. When it switched to colour, I didn't like it as much, which is a real,
snobbery, I call it.
What's the word? It's a artifact of me never having to watch television all the time in black and white.
Mm.
You know, to me,
black and white... It feels like you're watching something a bit special.
Yes, black and white to me reminds me of like going to university and doing my film courses and learning, you know, this kind of golden era of Hollywood.
Although I had a black and white TV in my bedroom. My first ever bedroom TV was a little black and white portable with a dial that you had to...
Yes, I had a dial.
And that makes me seem really old. But even in the 90s, that was still a thing, that was normal.
And as children who lived during the 80s and 90s, were you not the remote control?
Oh, yes.
When the channel needed changing or something, it'd be like, get the kids to do it.
Yeah, yeah. but I mean, the Joe Donnelly saga, which we always rave about having seen it a few years ago.
The American GI that killed...
He killed Steve Tanner, didn't he? But then in...
Returns to terrorise the street at Christmas.
Christmas 1970. Yeah, he's there. He's holding Irma Barlow hostage in the flat. And then he goes to number five and he's got...
And
Minnie Coldwell as well. And that was so kind of bleak and harrowing. And the gritty black and whiteness just adds to it. It's almost kind of film noirish, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a reason why...
I don't think it would be as good in colour.
Flashbacks are sometimes done in black and white.
Yeah. And you also had Valerie Barlow's death in January 1971. Everyone's seen the clip of her fiddling with the plug when her hairdryer doesn't work. And, you know, maybe that would have been as good in colour.
I don't know.
It just goes to show
There's just something about black and white Corrie that I really love.
Yeah, yeah. But it ended in February. Episodes 1050 and 1051 were shown in black and white, despite... Even though they'd reached the agreement at this point, because they'd been filmed in black and white, you had a couple of episodes.
Well, like we say, it's not just a case of flicking a switch. The equipment was completely different.
Mm.
You can't turn something filmed in black and white to colour in those days anyway. No. You might be able to do it now, but it would be very expensive.
Oh yeah, you get colourised clips of things, don't you? This kind of really stands out, shows to me how, you know, close to the bone they were cutting it with episodes. Like these days, you film an episode, what, 7-8 weeks in advance?
I bet you when they get to 7 weeks, they're like, oh, we're cutting it fine.
I know. Although back, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago when they filmed maybe 3 weeks in advance. And I did prefer that only because it made it harder for spoilers to get out there. Especially if there were paps or whatever filming them. And now you can say, so-and-so has been filmed, has been caught filming a scene doing this death-defying stunt. You'll be able to watch it in 2 or 3 months. It's like, oh, great, well, thanks for spoiling that.
I think because it's such a tight schedule now, they've got to do things for their own convenience.
Mm. I don't know how soon after recording the episodes these days they are fit for broadcast. But we do see, you know, when they're filming them, when we've been behind the scenes filming them, there is a lot of editing and stuff that
goes on.
It gets
done on the fly.
On the fly, exactly.
And then I think at the end of the week they put it all together.
Yeah, so it's...
So it must be done by the end of the week.
Yeah, fairly quickly. But anyway, we digress.
Well, it's put together for Ian McLeod to look at, and I don't know what changes, whether they get made the next week or...
No. And then it's fine. Let me go on.
I don't care. Just fine.
So, yeah, 1052 was the first back in colour episode of Coronation
Street. This is what happens to me on my deadline, where I've got everything happens on a Friday, and it's like, I can't be bothered. It's Friday. I want to go home.
Now, although 1052 was the first full colour one post colour strike, you did have a couple of episodes still to come which were a mixture of colour and black and white. So episodes 1054 and 1055 had some black and white location inserts. I think actually I've got a feeling that some of those hospital episodes after the coach crash also had a few black and white bits.
I think that was a weird episode. I remember it was a mishmash.
Yeah, I've got a vision of Bobby the cat crawling around a windowsill in black and white, even though the rest of it is in colour. But anyway, in this one...
We have to have the cat scene.
This is a funny episode that we watched a couple of years ago where Annie and Jack...
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just Annie, I can't remember, is invited to a motel to open it on behalf of the Weatherfield...
Ladies Victuals
Association. But she kind of makes out that she's got this posh... country pub somewhere, so she's putting on all these airs and graces. Unfortunately for her, Elsie, Tanner, Irma, and Alan, Elsie's is he husband at that point?
Yeah,
I can't remember. Can't have been husband.
Howard.
Maybe she was Elsie Howard. That's I don't know. They were there as well, and they'd been mistaken for the mayor and his family, and they were playing along with this. And
Irma's
great. Always great when she's given a role to play.
She loves playing along to be posh, doesn't she? So, she goes, oh, yes, hello.
So Annie didn't want to be found out as being not actually this posh country pub owner.
Yes.
So, and they didn't want to. And they all agreed to keep it quiet. But yeah, that had all of the scenes at the hotel were in black and white because I think it had been filmed early.
I would imagine
early.
They had to film it on location, maybe, so the equipment is probably...
Exactly. So, that goes to black and white and colour. But after that, from episode 1056 onwards, Coronation Street has always been in full colour, apart from the odd flashback here and there.
Like chucking people in bins.
Was that in black and white?
I think the flashback of it was.
I don't know. There's been a few flashbacks, haven't there? But anyway, union members in the ACTT agreed to a 4% pay rise then. And that put an end of that.
I don't know how much of this is to do with our biology about how we view black and white. Because at night we only see with our rods, don't we? It's not our cones.
I don't know. So, I don't have an A level in biology like you, Gemma.
It wasn't A level. So you could, at night you only really see in black and white, don't you?
I don't know.
You can only really see black. If you think about it, you need light to be able to see colour, right?
Yeah.
So how much of our biology is our nostalgia or what we think when we see a black and white image? Like a cat sees in different ways, completely different way to the way we see.
Yeah.
So if cats make Coronation Street, like maybe it would be in like infrared or whatever they see.
I think that should be a special that they do. I mean, there's only many soap firsts there are left to do. A cat made episode with a bit of soap.
Well, like, you know how dogs see different colours to humans with our eyes. This is the...
apparently so. I've not asked any dogs.
But if dogs made Coronation Street, they wouldn't. It would be a completely different show. Can you imagine?
This is getting far too silly, Gemma. This is supposed to be a serious piece of historical podcasting.
All right, I'm just saying, it boggles my mind. Our perception of reality is based on our biology, and people don't really realise that our eyes...
What if aliens made an episode of Coronation Street?
I maintain that aliens are around us at all times, but we just can't see them because...
And they are making episodes of Coronation Street.
They're like, get out of the way, we've got to film this, and we brought Annie Walker back from the dead.
Every time there's something a bit weird that goes on, a bit of experimental editing, alien.
Alien, right. The 1974 Grampian strike.
I'm going to leave this one to you because this was not a major strike by any stretch of the imagination, but this is just
kind of getting silly.
This is quite a funny one.
See, this is where we get silly now.
We're only reporting on the facts.
So, a bunch of naughty... I'm going to be sexist here. I'm assuming this is men. We're sitting around in the studio control room.
This is in Grampian TV. So, they were like the... I think this is North Scotland broadcast.
It's cold. Wing of ITV. It's cold at night up there. You need to spend your time. Do you know what they were doing? On the 5th of September 1974, watching a banned pornographic movie... that you may have heard of, called Deep Throat. And the director in charge, Tony Bacon, which is a great name, he got sacked the next day. And
they should have been doing their work, shouldn't they? Naughty films.
Well, they went on strike, but the reasons that they gave were that the dismissal procedures weren't followed.
No, Tony Bacon was just slung out on his ear and everyone else was like, oh, you're not allowed to just do that.
But it makes me wonder why was he chucked out? Was he like, what do you mean?
I think, you know,
do you think they told him? Do you think they told him and he was like, what? They watched it without me. I told them not to. They're like, get out, Tony.
No, I think Tony Bacon must have been the ringleader of this.
Chop the head off.
Yeah, exactly.
So, for a week, viewers in the region couldn't watch ITV and some of them couldn't even watch the BBC. So they had no TV.
No, they were so far up north, some of them couldn't even pick up BBC, so they didn't have any TV for a week.
Because these guys were watching porn at work. So at the end of the strike, it was agreed that the records should show that Tony Bacon resigned voluntarily.
Yes.
And so the service resumed, but they skipped all the episodes that they'd missed and they had a recount. And somebody read out.
This is what happened.
They're like, right, let me just find Choropedia. Right.
Didn't exist.
so they just read out and went, oh my God, can you believe it? This is what happened.
I think, that's one of my favourite reasons for there being a strike that affected Corrie, I have to say. We had a little strike in May 1975. It was just a short-term thing about technician pay. And Corrie wasn't shown on the 26th or the 28th of May 1975. Little bit longer in Scotland, but that was, minimal disruption there. But July 1979, the strikes came back in full force, and this was the longest, most costliest, most bitterly fought strike in the history of ITV, and it actually had the biggest amount of damage for Coronation Street. Now, this is the end of the 1970s, so we said at the beginning of the podcast just how much striking that they'd been. I mean, 1979 as well was when they had the Winter of Discontent, which is when, as far as I can tell, pretty much everyone in the public
sector went on strike. Everyone was cold, and your bins didn't get taken.
People weren't happy with the Labour government at this time, which is what Margaret Thatcher latched onto the following year, but in July 1979.
You sound like you know what you're talking about.
Thanks. I've done a little bit. Well, you know, my new best friend, ChatGPT, I asked it to explain, like I'm five, what was going on with the strikes in the 60s and 70s. And this is what it's told me, anyway. That things were going bad. Inflation rates were high, and ITV had already offered a 9% pay rise to its workers to try and cope with that. Unions are like, no way, we want 25%
rise. Have you seen the price of chips? We want 25%.
Yeah. Price of chips, price of pies. So the main unions involved with all this industry action were the EETPU, which is the Electrical, Electronic, Telecommunications and Plumbing Union, catchy. Nice. The NATTKE, the National Association of Theatrical, Television and Kine, I don't know, that's means cinema, cinema, doesn't yeah. it? Employees, and then the ACTT again, the technicians that have been involved in the previous strike. So there was a lot of unions very dissatisfied at this time. And it all kicked off on the 23rd of July 1979 when there was a one-day blackout of ITV and everyone went on strike.
But nobody noticed because they didn't have any electricity.
It didn't end there. So during August, the EETPU worked strictly to rules, so like they wouldn't do any overtime or anything.
Good.
Overtime, you know, was a thing. It was needed. You know.
Imagine if teachers did that. Imagine if teachers went, we're working normal hours. We're going to do 9 to 3, 25.
No, so you'll do
nine
anyway,
to then. Five.
Yeah.
That's a normal, and you took an hour out for lunch. The whole system would
country
collapse.
Would grind to a halt. So
well, the kids would just be more thick, wouldn't they?
So they were working to rule. In other regions of the UK, including like Thames and HTV, the ACTT members were suspended, or they walked out, or they were locked out of the building again by
the
management.
Like, well, you're not coming in, then you're not allowed.
And by Friday the 10th of August, the entire ITV network was completely blacked out. Apart from on the Channel Islands. So if you lived in Jersey or Guernsey or anywhere there, you could still watch ITV, although I can't vouch for the quality of the programming that was going on back those days. But they still had ITV at least. And then everywhere else in the country, if you turned on your telly onto three, you'd get this just a bit of text on the screen saying, sorry, we're no ITV, there's industrial disputes, we'll get back as soon as we can. So that kept on going right through to
BRB
to autumn time. Yeah, there was. It was a BRB, ITV, exactly. on the 22nd of October, they backed down a little bit, did management, and increased their pay offers to 17.5% pay rise,
good.
With a few concessions as well. And this was agreed by the unions. On Wednesday, the 24th of October, ITV returned. So this was literally 3 months, is that? With no ITV, and this was the only time really that Coronation Street has gone off the air for an extended period. Even though during COVID, I'm sure there were some people working for ITV saying, well, you know, we're the only soap that hasn't gone off air at all, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, we never have. It's all lies, they did. There was 3 months without Curry. Can you imagine, what would you do? If it happened now, would we just have a little break from the podcast?
Well, we
or would
it
be bonus
it,
episodes
we?
Only? Did we? Oh, yeah, yeah, we must have done, mustn't we? But anyway,
how did they cope with it, Michael?
I don't know. I really don't.
No, you do. Crossroads. What?
Well, yeah, this is just when they came back.
How did
back.
They deal with the break?
I'm going to tell you, Gemma. So, Noel Gordon.
Nolly.
Did we talk about that?
It was great. Loved
Nolly
it.
On ITVX. It's fantastic. Helena Bonham Carter
so
playing
much.
Noel Gordon. I love that. Thank you very much for the recommendation. Anyway, she was... She was from Crossroads, spoke to camera about what had been going on. And now we're back to Crossroads, we've been on strike. Coronation Street, for their part, filmed a special scene on the street with Bette Lynch and Len Fairclough discussing what had been going on in Weatherfield recently. So it's more in-universe, although by the end of the scene, you've got Peter Adamson, who played Len, turning to the camera and breaking the fourth wall and saying,
Anyways, what room do you have?
Yeah, basically. Unfortunately, that scene isn't available to see anymore. It used to be on YouTube. I don't think I've ever seen it, but it used to be there and it's been taken down since. I hope somebody is able to upload it again at some point, because I'd really love to see that. You can see a few... archive news clips of those two. There's a clip I saw of Julie Goodyear saying, oh, I've just been sitting and put Potter around at home and getting the decorators in. But so that and then Coronation Street resumed. What were you going to say?
I don't know.
Sorry, I interrupted you. If it comes back to you, do interrupt me again. Anyway, so Corey was back that October, and I can't remember how the other soaps coped with this after returning from a COVID break, but Coronation Street just kind of carried on as if nothing had happened. That's, and they Corey's just carried on with the next episode. Trait. Yeah.
For good or bad, that's what Corey does.
So Brian and Gail were supposed to have got married that summer. And there was plenty of talk leading up to the summer about, we're going to have a big summer wedding. But in the end, they just moved their wedding to November.
Do you know what that is? What? It's one of them famous last-minute cancellations.
Yeah, you're right.
Somebody else had their wedding. Like, oh my God, we can get married this summer!
No, but it's not going on telly. They just got married in November, and there was no mention of, hang on a minute, we were supposed to be getting married in summer. They were just like, no, we were always meant to get married in November, honestly. Don't ask any questions. No questions. There's also, funny, if you look at episode, actually, I haven't got the number.
The episode broadcast.
The episode shown on the 12th of November that year, it seems to have partly been filmed before the strike and partly afterwards. And it's not particularly noticeable, although there's one minor character that disappears halfway through the episode, who was, I can't remember, was it Bill or something? I can't remember, but the actor who played him, Harry Scott, said his role was terminated by the strike, so he just didn't turn up again in the second half of the episode. But apart from that, it's not really noticeable. There's a couple of props that are in different places between the first and the second, like some cushions in Rita's flat, apparently. But the most noticeable change, and this is something that we might remember that happened around COVID time as well, was that Rita's hair was notably different between the two halves of the episode. And if you remember when they came back off COVID, you had like Simon Barlow have a massive blowout in his
hair. Because nobody could get the hair done.
No.
You couldn't get your hair cut.
Yeah, and you had like Nick clean shaven and sometimes stubbly. So,
and they all had to do their own makeup as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything was very hot.
But apart from that, they just carried on after that as normal. And this marked the end of that particular strike and the end of the 70s. And after this point, unions were never in such a strong position as they were in the 1960s and 70s. And so there's never again been anything quite like this that's affected TV broadcasting here in the UK. The only real time since that Corey has been affected by strike action was in early 1983, when there was a mini strike that delayed one of the Ken, Mike, Deirdre Love Triangle episodes by a few days. Which, I assume they picked that time because they saw the momentum that story was having and the amount of people that would be
annoyed
by the strike. But they're not. I think we should be more that,
French
really.
About it.
Well,
they're always on strike.
French
aren't
are always on strike, things. Yeah. And I think, I don't know, if they were to have strikes these days, whether... Would it grind things to a halt? Would it delay
the
things?
The purpose of a strike is to do that. So yeah. They would have to ensure that they had done it.
The problem is, like we said, Coronation Street have got episodes ready, you know, over a month in advance. And this is why they were able to carry on through COVID. They if you remember, they went down from six episodes a week, three episodes a week, so that they just stretched it out. And yes, by the time they started recording again, they were running out. But that just showed that they could go... How long was that? Like 4 or 5 months, maybe?
It's
I can't
like a
remember.
Snake that is eating a giant
so
hamster.
If things were to stop at Coronation Street these days, rest assured, things would be okay.
No, I would hope
unless it was the technicians that were just like, we're not showing anything.
We're not going to do it.
If ITV went completely off the air, what are you going to do about that?
Exactly. This is what, you don't. It's not a good thing that strikes are more difficult to pull off.
Well, no, there's been certainly lots of changes in legislation in recent years that have made it very difficult for strikes to go ahead.
If a strike isn't disruptive, then it's not a good strike, is it?
No.
That's the point. It's supposed to go, give us what we want, otherwise you're going to have to do without us and you can't. Look, see how mad you are.
So you've got to have like over half of the members voting or something for it to be counted and then a certain percent. So it's the government obviously does not like striking. And
strange.
So it's unlikely. It's funny to
considering
again.
They don't do any work.
There was.
I went there.
There was kind of rumours that a strike might happen in 2001. There was an article I found from the Guardian back then, and allegedly Equity was called in when ITV tried to introduce new contracts that would see some of the Coronation Street stars' salaries slashed by up to £50,000 a year. So
we're talking
the big names like William Roach and Barbara Knox and things.
I'm not paying them money to go to work.
So Granada wanted to cut the retainer payments, guaranteeing 80 episodes a year for all of the cast, down from 100.
Yeah, I don't know if people understand how the contracts go, but
these days,
when you're an actor, if you're a full time contract, a year, you get a guaranteed number of episodes in a year, and you will get paid no matter if you do those or not. And anything over that, you get paid extra.
Yeah, so Granada by this time, in the early 2000s, this is when the cast numbers were starting to balloon, and Granada were like, we can't have this many cast on the books, guarantee that many episodes. And some actors, I mean, as you see these days, are just brought in for a scene to say, I'll have a pint, please, love.
If you ever
brilliant,
see,
that's me being paid for the episode.
If you ever see an episode where somebody's in and you're like, I don't know why they were in that scene, it's usually because they've got to get their guaranteed number of...
Yeah.
And when you write an episode, you'll be told, you've got to have these characters in this scene or this location, because it's how... the production is done. You have to.
Yeah.
You can't just sit down and go, I'm going to write an episode where this happens.
No, there's lots of.
It's so complicated now.
I mean, this was all very much allegedly, because at the time Granada said, well, there's no discussion of strike action, and you know what the papers are like for riling things up and everything.
Well, this was the Guardian.
Yeah, well, I know. Are they more trustworthy?
Well, they're left wing, so they would be. They would like the idea of a strike.
They would like the strikes.
It's not like exactly the Sun, where it's like a source close to Coronation Street.
So who knows whether that would have actually happened and what the effects of that would be. But luckily, we never have to find out. And that is the end of strikes on Coronation Street.
That's strikes in the world outside Coronation Street.
Yes.
But in the show of Coronation Street, they've also been quite militant.
Well, you know, Coronation Street does like to reflect the political climate of the time.
It's interesting to me that they didn't start till 1973, because it was obviously a sore subject for everybody back in the 60s when it was the actors on strike.
I have to say, it wasn't the easiest thing for me to try and find out about all the strikes that the characters went on Coronation Street.
Were...
The earliest I found was 1973, but it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if there are a heck of a lot more.
There's definitely two different types of strikes on Coronation Street. There's the informal, we're just going to down tools and this is not an organised union thing. And there's the proper union kind of...
Mm.
And it's more likely on Coronation Street to be a casual, we're not going to do what you tell us to do.
Usually at the factory.
Like a toddler refusing to eat peas at lunch.
Yeah.
I hate it when they do that.
Yeah.
So in 1973, this is the first time they have a strike.
No, don't say that.
That we found. And so this is when Billy was in charge of Billy Walker, Annie and Jack's...
son.
Jack the lad's son. He's in charge of the Rovers, and he makes Bet and Betty work too hard, so they picket the pumps until he gives in.
Yes. And then in 19...
incidentally, Picket the Pumps was also another pornographic film.
Disgusting. In 1974, so this is when they had the Mark Britton warehouse opposite the Rovers side of the street. It was like a... What did they do there again? It was like a distribution...
It was a home... catalogue.
Yes, yeah.
Packaging.
Yeah, warehouse. Exactly. So it's they threatened to go on strike, the workers there, unless they got union representation.
Like, you don't need it, love.
Mm. So Ken's just got a job there as administrative assistant, and he's the one that has to deal with Peggy Barton, who's the ringleader of all these rabble raisers.
What a dilemma for a granola eating lefty.
I know.
Guardian reading. Ken Barlow to break up a strike.
But anyway, they get a union in the end, and that's the end of it. Peggy ends up resigning, although then gets a job on the union and ends up dating Ken as well. So she was one of the people that we talked about last year when we were doing the conquests of Ken Barlow.
Yeah. In 1976, the factory girls want to have their payday changed from Friday to Thursday.
So this was at the Baldwin's factory, I think.
Ernest Bishop, who was the wages clerk, he refuses, so they shoot him in the face.
No, that's not what happens. No, Stop making up things.
They go on strike, and Mike ends up agreeing to their demands, and he tells Ernie off for handling the situation poorly. So Ernie arranges for someone to shoot him in
Stop
the face.
It. 90... See, this is almost like an annual thing yeah, that happened in, during is, the 70s. Honestly, strike, I mean, strike, strike.
Even watching it in the, you know, in the 2000s, I'm sure that every other episode they're telling Carla they're going on strike.
Yeah. 1977, so this is a strike by the brewery Drayman in Weatherfield, and you had a character played by Peter Armitage, who's of course much better known as playing Bill Webster, but way before then he played a guy called Maurice Allen, who is employed by Annie to redecorate the Rovers, but he was doing a little bit of moonlighting and he got sacked by the brewery. So he's supposed to be a brewery drayman, and Annie gets him to redecorate the Rovers, and so he gets sacked. The brewery draymen then go on strike in sympathy, but that leads to the beer supply running low, and you know, back in the day, not back in the 70s, the vast majority of the population of Coronation Street ran on beer as their main source. This was pretty serious stuff.
Serious danger of withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah. Fortunately, this is when we had Eddie Yates and Stan Ogden come to the rescue by brewing beer in the bar.
I remember this episode.
They just make a huge tank full of it, didn't they?
And they were stirring it with a
stick. Stirring the bath. But yeah.
I think they decided in the end that nothing beats a nice pint of
Newton and Ridley.
So 1978, Hilda.
This is the first proper big story that was to do with strike and showed the characters going out on strike for a decent amount of time.
Hilda's the cleaner at the factory, and she asks Mike for a new broom, and in return he sacks her. So Ivy calls a union meeting. See, I love Ivy being in charge of the union. I can't remember.
I don't remember, but it, in my head, like, the most militant of all factory workers in Coronation Street have been Ivy, yes. Tilsley and Ida Clough.
And Karen.
Was she?
I don't, maybe she's mouthy.
I see Janice as being a bit more of a stirrer in the modern times.
I wouldn't cross her.
But Mike, he didn't care about labour laws at all. And I saw a clip the other day of Hilda with this broom, and it really was the rattiest, tattiest thing. There was barely a bristle left on it. And Mike's like, no, if you're going to ask for a new one, then it's easier for me to just sack you.
So most of the factory girls agree with Ivy's proposition of a strike, but Ida isn't keen because Hilda's not in the union anyway, so the union refuses to back it. So the girls walk out anyway. Vera organises a picket line. Everyone's favourite factory worker, Steve Fisher, crosses it to get to work because he's a scab. And so the girls block his van when he tries to drive the denim order out.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark and Steve end up having to...
Did you say Mark and Steve? Mark Baldwin.
Mike and Steve man the sewing machines to try to get the orders out.
Yeah, so this goes for a couple of weeks with the factory girls just standing there with their signs outside the factory, and Mike and Steve are the only two left trying to keep this business running.
Gail and Susie have got a shop and they need to get stock for it, so they try to get past the picket line, but they get mobbed. And then Mike gets a bunch of non-union labour in to finish the order. So the girls smash the windows.
Non-union labourers, also known as blacklegs, which is another word that I learnt in my Street Talk book that you got me. Was it there for Christmas or birthday last year?
Yeah,
so blacklegs are people that get brought in to cover the work of people that are out on strike.
This is the origin of the big, rivalry between Southampton and Portsmouth.
What?
Because Portsmouth went on strike and we were the scabs.
Oh, were we?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So,
the thing with these blacklegs is they didn't know they were blacklegs. They thought they were just being brought in to do some work. And they realised that they're covering for these striking factory girls.
So
they go on
strike.
They go on strike as well. They said, no way.
So, Mike then says that I'll just pay you to make the girls think you're working so you can sit about chatting while I pay you.
Yeah.
But eventually he has to give in and take Hilda back.
Yeah. Yeah, after many weeks of industrial action,
I'm sure many weeks of him sitting around with a whiskey in his hand going, these goddamn plebs won't do what I say.
Now, 1981, a couple of years later, saw a paperboy strike. When the boys demanded an extra £1 a week from Len Fairclough at the cabin.
Just like the newsies now, back
in the day. Rita tries to give one of the paper girls, I think it was a girl, a pound on the quiet so that the papers still go out. But then the main ringleader of the strike scares her off. Len then employed Bert Tilsley to do the job, but then the kids persuade him to stop as well. And eventually, Bert agrees to a 65p pay rise. So
you've always got to pitch
not
higher.
Bad, not
you've
bad.
You've always got to ask for more than you want.
They wanted a pound, they got 65p. You know, it's better than 50%, I mean.
It's better than having a...
Better than a kick in the teeth.
A bristleless broom.
Yes.
1985, Mike employs strike breaker Harry Wakefield as a driver, but the machinists refuse to work with him on the team, so they threaten to walk out if Mike doesn't sack him. But he gets fed up with the girls and leaves anyway.
Yeah, there's real, like... It really feels like in the world of Coronation Street that if there is somebody who breaks a strike or if there's somebody who refuses to join the others on a strike, they are properly sent to Coventry, aren't they?
You should be. You should be. I think if you don't go along, your colleagues are trying to raise the conditions for everybody in a team... And you don't go out, you don't support them, or you cross the picket line.
I think there's a lot of people just too nice about it these days. But see, not back then.
I remember my nan used to work in a computer chip factory, and she was militantly anti-union. And I don't. She went around busting the unions at her work, and I've got no idea why.
Knowing her, that doesn't seem like.
I know. I think what she did was started her own rival union, which was just her, just being awkward.
Let's skip to 1998 now. I'm sure there must have been strikes in the meantime, but I couldn't find any. And this was when Hayley came to work at Underworld, and Mike finds out about her past and, you know, her gender reassignment surgery and everything that she'd been going through. And he's like, I'm not having that. If everyone else finds out about this, there's going to be chaos. That you know, I'm employing this transsexual, and they're using the same toilet and everything like this. And this was
very,
you know,
topical.
Very topical now. Back in those days, it was like, whoa.
Well, it was completely unheard of. Really,
it
I
was.
Don't think that anyone would have ever
thought
about this, let alone known somebody or given it any thought.
Exactly. So
other than as a joke.
But Hayley, by this point, had grown to be a very beloved character and you know, a popular colleague to the other factory girls.
Well,
so when Mike gives her the heave-ho for, you know, no particular reason.
I don't know. Was it a protected... I don't know if it was a protected characteristic.
I don't even know if we had those things back then.
No, I don't know, but I think you wouldn't be able to do that.
Ida Clough, because Ida Clough was most famously working at the factory in the 70s and 80s, I think, and she'd returned for a short stint in the late 90s, and she was the one that stirs the factory girls up and says, right, we're going to go on strike unless you give Hayley her job back, which she ends up doing. Because he gets fed up of Alma nagging him about it. And I think, I'm pretty sure Hayley's the one that announces to all the factory girls, you know, Mike Baldwin, Mike sacked me because I'm a transsexual. But,
well, again, I have to say this every time, that was the word that Hayley used to describe herself, which was the word that was used at the time, which
indeed.
Is not a word that you would necessarily use now. But as we all know, it's a lot more complicated and different people have different opinions about what the correct terminology would be.
I think we're safe, Jem.
2001.
Navigated that thorny minefield.
Should hire me everywhere.
You should just be a diplomat, I tell
you. Right, 2001. Toya announces a strike at the Rovers because Dougie's like, right, get the girls in some skimpy uniforms. Everybody likes.
Yeah, so this
a bit
is
of skirt behind the bar.
This is when the Rovers had been taken over by Dougie Ferguson, Fred Elliott, and Mike Baldwin, who completely, you know, were awful running of the three of it, the three of together, because they just couldn't see eye to eye on anything. And yeah, Dougie's new idea was to get. I think it was Toya and Gina, and I can't remember whether Shelley was there at the
Betty
time.
Involved in
I don't
this.
Think they wanted Betty to wear skimpy uniforms, but she joins the Younguns in solidarity, didn't
Betty,
she?
Betty, you could do a whole podcast just on all the times Betty threatened to stop working.
Yeah, whether it's retiring or striking.
Good 20 years sulking behind the bar there.
Yeah.
So Gina and Betty join Toya in a picket outside the pub, and then Dougie has to to back down because they start to lose custom. But then Toya starts demanding more.
Yeah, they have a meeting together and Toya's like, right, we'll come back.
We're on the back foot here.
Yeah, I want more breaks, want a pay rise.
Yeah, good for her. Mike and Dougie refuse, but then Linda, who's Mike's wife.
I think they were married at this point, but
she's like, okay. Maybe
all getting there.
Fine, what we'll do, I'll negotiate with you, we'll have no uniform change. You will get a 10% pay rise and you'll get a £50 bonus.
Yeah, and Toya's not particularly happy with that, but Gina and Betty were like, well, don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
They were like, I didn't have this a minute ago, that'll do for me. And you can go move on to your prawns.
The Rovers is just like on the verge of collapse at this time with these three guys running the place. And I think there was a spell when Linda was manageress at the Rovers just to try and do it properly. Then we had 2005, Janice gets sacked because for having a go at Danny Baldwin, Mike's son, who's running, or nephew. Was it nephew or son? I can't remember. I'm going to say son. I'm going to say son. He smashes the girls' radio. Janice has a go at him, so she gets sacked. Everyone goes out on strike apart from Sally.
Scab.
She's just too much of a brown-noser, isn't she?
If anybody on Coronation Street who isn't Summer, it's Hermione. Story of Coronation Street, it is Sally.
So Danny ends up bringing in
teacher,
some...
teacher, you forgot to give us homework.
Sally ends up... I forgot what I was saying there. Danny ends up bringing in some black leggers to keep the factory machines going there. When he refuses to back down to their demands, even when Mike Baldwin advises him they should probably be giving the girls what they want, and Mike tells the girls that your strike's illegal, you're not even allowed to do this. I'm going to sack you all unless you all come back to work, including Janice. So they do. So he's able to solve that problem just by telling them they're all striking illegally. But there is a kind of a funny sting to that tale where Janice eventually is able to get Sally to join or to go on the picket line. But what Sally doesn't realise is the strike's over and she ends up going striking on her own. What a mug.
What an idiot. 2007, Paul Connor sacks Sean for mimicking Michelle. Which I think
we've all done it, haven't we? We've all made fun of Michelle in the past.
And the rest of the workers pick at the factory, and then Liam gives him his job back, and so the strike ends.
Yeah. So we're rushing through these. This is not as interesting in the slightest as the real life strikes, but it feels weird to do. Yeah, we did
real life stuff first.
Well, you know, the graphic for this episode is going to be Coronation Street characters on strikes because there aren't actually any pictures of the real life strikes.
There also aren't very many famous technicians.
No, I'm not going to get the viewers in or the listeners in.
And
by...
it wasn't like all the people that didn't have a contract in 1961, 62 on Corrie who were actors were standing outside Granada Studios with signs.
So I do apologise for people who've listened to this in the hope that it was mostly going to be an episode about all the interesting storylines when characters went on strike, because to be honest, I don't find striking stories that interesting, but we had to include them in the episode so it wasn't false advertising.
It's literally, oh, we want something, well, you can't have it, well, then we won't work.
Yeah. So we've got Janice trying to get the factory workers to strike against Carla in 2011 because Carla reduces the factory girls' hours. She just ends up sacking Janice, and when the girls refuse to go on strike with her, Janice leaves Weatherfield with Trevor the Bin Man. And then we have, what's that next? 2016. I remember this one. This was when all the factory girls, I would say girls, but you know, it includes Sean and Kirk probably and Dirk as well. But
I'll tell you what, you can be an honorary girl if you like.
They're offered double time to work at the factory during the August bank holiday, but instead they sit and watch a film.
I love it.
And this is when Johnny comes and catches them because Jenny, who's working as the cleaner then, and has also got the hots for Johnny. She's his spy, isn't she?
I remember this really vividly.
And she dobs them in. Yeah. And Johnny comes back and he does his da 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 da. Do you remember that? Da da
da da da da da da
da. Yeah, docks all their pay. So the girls are led by Sally in a walkout.
Oh, she's changed,
isn't
she?
I know. Well, she realised that it didn't work out quite so well for her last time. So then we have all the factory girls standing outside in the hot August sun, picketing the factory. I think by the end of the episode, they're back in again because Aidan Connor has offered them all cakes. And they're like, yeah, that'll do. Let's go back to work then.
Do you know what I really
People
fancy
made the
right
softer
now?
Stuff these days.
One of them long... cream-filled donuts.
Do you fancy that? I hope we can have one later. That'll get you back into work. Well, maybe this is just what they need to offer the teachers and the doctors and the train drivers.
You don't want more money.
Let them eat cake.
And easier conditions. All right, 2018. This is when, can you believe this happened? No. Alia was the new owner of the Underworld.
Yes, I do remember.
And she's like, I've got to show everyone who's boss. I'm going to sack Fizz. Fizz leaves to go pick up Hope from school. And so Alia shows her authority.
She asserts her dominance, doesn't she?
And everyone strikes and Alia backs down.
Yeah.
She's spineless.
Yeah. And I don't think there's been any factory strikes since then. See, the thing with the factory at the moment is because 50% of the shares are owned by the factory workers themselves. They'd kind of be shooting themselves in the foot if they strike now, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So I think that's how they got them. But we did have, of course, the famous bin man strike of Weatherfield just last year in 2022, when Councillor Maria Connor decides to introduce a separate glass collection service, which I would have kind of thought that everybody would have these days anyway, but apparently not in Weatherfield. And the bin men aren't happy because it means they've got extra work to do. They all strike. When the strike is eventually called off, the council say they're going to burn all the excess recyclable materials that have been collecting up in the weeks. And that is when Toya leads a protest. And that's when Spider comes back in.
Yes.
And I believe that's the last time that we've had strikes on Coronation Street.
Yes, we haven't talked about protests because that's a different thing. There's a lot of protests that happened on Coronation Street, but sometimes a strike turns into a protest and vice versa.
But yeah, I must say that I do get a little bit bored with them.
They are really the same.
There's only
every
so
time.
Much that you can do with a strike story. I mean, I'm not, you know, a creative. Maybe if you gave me a bit of time to sit down and think about, could you make a strike story interesting? You might be able to come up with something slightly different. But it's basically just a load of, I'm going to say, usually factory girls standing outside going rah, 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 and then going back to work again at the end. I need there to be a strike that has the lasting impact of, like, of the 1979 ITV strikes where the channel went off air for 3 months. I need like serious striking that's going to have long-term consequences. Maybe this is what eventually could shut the factory down for good, because it always manages to overcome its many hurdles, doesn't it?
I think the issue is that as a bunch of leftists and limp-wristed liberals working on Coronation Street, all these creative types of their writing and their ideas and their creativity and acting and things, I think on the whole they support, and I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but I think in general you would say that they support the idea of strike action, and so anything that reflects poorly on that wouldn't be a good idea or something that they would want to put in the show. If you had a strike that ended up shutting down the factory, the other thing to consider is it's not just what the Corrie writers and the Corrie creative team think, but also what they would be telling the viewing public. And there's never been a time when strikes aren't political, but these days there is a lot of conversation going on about them, and obviously it is a lot of the times divided down political lines, and people are not, depending on their leanings, that sympathetic necessarily. So if they had a story where the factory had to shut down because the strike just made them lose so much business they had to go out of business, Coronation Street would be accused, and rightfully so, of politicising strikes and making them out to be negative and harmful.
Yeah, maybe.
They've got to be a bit more savvy than that. They can't...
The other thing
they
I
can't
thought...
make them too serious.
The other thing with strike stories is that they work best when there is a real tyrant boss.
Yeah, in a sense of injustice.
Yeah, and that worked great in the 70s and 80s when you had Mike Baldwin, who was this, you know, cockney, ruthless, didn't care about his factory workers' rights in the slightest. And so when Ida and Vera and Ivy and all that lot stood up against him, like, yeah, go on there. And even, you know, like I was saying with Gina and Toya standing up to Dougie and Mike in the Rovers, where Dougie was a really cruel boss at times, because you felt like it was easy to stand behind them. I don't know whether... I mean, Carla can be cruel, but I don't think she's viewed as a villain in this quite the same way as Mike or Dougie were in their boss role. So what you need is a business that's got a real kind of real nasty piece of work running the place.
Yeah, like
so that you could be, you know,
antagonist.
Yeah, boy going, yeah, I stand behind them. I mean, there's been plenty of places on Coronation Street that hasn't seen strike action. Like, have the bistro workers ever been on strike?
I mean,
I don't know, but what would happen then? People would just go to the speed dial more.
You could flip it. You could flip it so that the workers are the terrorists. You know, but again, that's in danger of undermining the whole idea of strike. So I can imagine maybe Yasmin, maybe all the workers there going, no, we're not, you know, you've launched a new menu and you haven't given us enough time. And then Yasmin's there going, oh no, but what am I going to do? It's actually more interesting if you've got a real, yeah, I agree with you. It's exciting when there's injustice and they're protesting that, but more interesting one would be, yeah, but I need you guys to do this. And I'm saying, you can't expect us to do this because we're not getting paid for it or we're not being compensated in the appropriate way. And the boss being like, I've got no choice. It's this or we're all, you know, unemployed.
Yeah, it could work that way, couldn't it?
Because with the economic pressure on everybody at the moment, Coronation Street has dabbled a little bit with, you know, Gemma saying, oh, I can't afford my heating bill, for example. I just wonder if Coronation Street's a bit nervous of entering those.
Too political, maybe. Mm. Maybe these days.
When reflecting reality is political, but there you go.
One thing that, I mean, a lot of the strikes that we hear about in the real life these days are the doctors and the teachers. I mean, they're the big, and the nurses. They're the big.
And trains.
Yeah.
And in
Coronation Street, we do have doctors. Dr. Gaddas, we've got Aggie, a nurse, we've got teachers, Daniel, but the problem is that they can't, because Coronation Street gets filmed so far in advance, they can't incorporate that into the show, yeah. So then it's like it didn't happen. But I wouldn't be adverse, I don't think, to there being a story where the Weatherfield nurses go on strike. I think that could be quite a good way of raising awareness of all the hard work that these NHS nurses do, and maybe they don't get paid enough for it or they don't get enough credit. And having Aggie, because she can be quite, you know, quite forceful, can't she? She can be quite a force to be reckoned with. I'd quite like to see her doing a strike, but I don't know what that would look like as a story.
I want to see Dr. Gaddas come and call Paul and Gemma back in and say, right, I've looked into your hand issue and I can tell you. I know what it is, but I'm not going to tell you because I'm on strike.
Yeah.
Get out.
I don't know whether I'd like to see Daniel on strike or not, because he's already quite
insufferable. Daniel would not elicit sympathy, would he? He'd be like, oh, I'm not going to go into work again. Oh, why this time, Daniel? Oh, because I'm on strike. Oh, so that's different from you just taking the day off for no reason, is it?
I mean, I would find generally the concept of there being a story about hardworking teachers and going on strikes, that would be... could be interesting, but also that it would run the risk of not doing us justice or villainizing us.
Well, it'd be terrifying because
whatever.
You know, you'd go on Twitter and all these people would be going.
But yeah, I even if they don't align time wise with actual strikes, it wouldn't be a bad of an idea, I think, to have stories about that. But yeah, Corrie does need to be very careful with certain political issues, unfortunately. But anyway, that's kind of it. I think
I'm not going to say anything.
I think we're done. Are we done? Are we done enough strike talking today?
We're on strike now. That is no more Coronation. No more Conversation Street from us
for the next few days
until Friday, Saturday.
I hope that everybody listening that have stuck through to the end enjoyed that stuff, especially at the beginning. I can't say the last half an hour of chat has been the most riveting that we've been. But honestly, all the stories about everyone going on strike, the technicians and the actors and the colour strike and the sea lions and and the naughty movies that were shown in Grampy and TV, I find that stuff really, really fascinating. And the information's all out there to read, and there's a lot more about it as well on Corriepedia and Wikipedia and everything. But I hope that we've been able to
do a
good job of making it kind of interesting to listen to.
Yeah.
That is it. Thank you everybody for joining us today.
If you are on strike, do not send us emails because that would break it. But if you're on strike, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com.
Anybody can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com.
No, if you're on
nobody's
strike.
On strike from podcast listening, thank goodness.
You don't know.
Is that somebody's job?
Probably, yeah.
Probably is, yeah. We will be back this weekend with more chat about the week's Coronation Street, but until then, we are signing off now, so goodbye from me.
Bye!
Goodbye, and the music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.